Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 20, delivered on October 31.
Tonight, stock valuation alternatives. Before we get to that, a quick look at the numbers, and as you can see, it was a fairly rough day on the street. Primarily, the action occurred in the early trading hours. Yesterday was an up day because the Fed cut interest rates, and that news is old news now, so what happened today was today. And earlier in the morning, China had said that there would probably be no long-term comprehensive resolution, at least from the current perspective, to the trade war that's going on between the U.S. and China. And so as you can see, the market corrected downward on that news. And that news was finished up a little, that correction was finished up, the information was absorbed into the market by a little after 10 o'clock in the morning. So what happened after that was all on its own. There was a rebound, a bull run here, most likely bargain hunters grabbing up some stocks that had been taken down inappropriately. And then, as you can see, it just kind of bobbles around back and forth for the rest of the day. It seemed to come up a little bit on some optimism at the end, but notice how information gets absorbed and reflected in stock prices very quickly. You can't read news yesterday or last week or last year and expect to have any play from that remaining after the traders have taken it and beaten it up in the stock prices immediately. Just a little caution about thinking that there's something to be seen in old stock prices. There isn't. S&P 500 down a respectable three-tenths of a percent. The Dow was slapped a little harder, down 0.5%. And the NASDAQ was the one that didn't fall much at all. Looking over quickly at the bonds, gold was a beneficiary, moving equity funds that had been raised by sales of stocks and moving that to gold. Silver was good too. Notice that the bond market took a pretty heavy beating today. Price was down nearly 6%, which of course points to higher interest rates as a result of that. Price goes down, yields go up. So we are seeing an environment where the Fed wants interest rates to go one way and the markets seem to want the interest rates to go the other way. Who wins in that fight? The markets will in the end. The Fed can only hold off the inevitable for so long, and the longer they hold it off, the worse the fall is when the long term begins to bite in. Always keep that in mind. Markets tend to find their preferred solution, notwithstanding what the Fed wants to have happen in the short run, notwithstanding what the White House wants to have happen. Moving on to today's topic, though, this is stock valuation alternatives. Now, stock valuation. Now, the model I showed you on Tuesday was the dividend growth model. Which simply says that a stock's price will be, if it's already a stable growth of the dividend, if it's already stable, the current price will be the dividend in the next period divided by the discount rate for these dividends, for this cash flow, for the stock, let's put R sub S there, minus the growth rate, G. And D1 is the current stock price times 1 plus G. In other words, grow at one period. That's the basic model if the stock's dividends are already stable. In other words, the company is in its more mature phase, growing quietly, ponderously, if you will. Now, the variation on that was the horizon model, where you'll have a period of instability, a number of years, where the dividends will be going up and down or erratic, and then somewhere along the line, the dividends smooth out into the constant growth. And so this is more of the horizon model here, where, and I'm going to write this, it's a little, looks complicated, but it's just saying, look, the stock price currently will be the sum of the present values of those erratic dividends. Of those erratic dividends, the sum of the present value of the those erratic dividends up to period T. Now T is the horizon time. And then you get to the horizon and you get, you'll take the present value of the stable dividends from T plus 1 on. Now that looks a little bit fancy there, but it's just saying, look, take the present value of the crazy dividends, find the present value at T, this would be the present value at time T of the stable horizon dividends on out to infinity. Take the present value of both of those, add them up, and you got the stock price. I did the examples last on Tuesday. Not really complicated, a little bit tedious, but remember that you can use the calculator to get those numbers cranked back to the present fairly easily. So those are the two basic ways that you can value. Let me write something quickly right here. This is for common stock. Now, there is actually a price you can calculate for preferred stock. Now, preferred stock has a fixed dividend that you get forever, every year, or what, something, maybe every quarter. Now, the price of, this is for common stock. Now, the price for preferred stock is actually just the dividend growth simplified, because D1 is the same as D2, they're all the same D, divided by the R of the preferred, and that's it, because minus G is minus zero. They don't grow. They just sit same amount every year forever. So that's the twist on the, it's not really a twist, it's just the simplified version. And preferred stock behaves very quietly, and it's very safe. Well, it's not very safe, but it's considerably safer than common, because your dividend is defined in the stock certificate itself. They say the stock is $40 par value per share. Your dividend is 1%. So in other words, what that says is that every year you're going to get 40 cents, 1% of the par value. In a way, it's sort of like bonds. But I just wanted to bring that up because there are a few homework problems that bring that up. But now, moving on to a little bit more complex models that sometimes can be used. One of those is, this is actually kind of a stupid one, but it's popular as a quickie way to take a shot at the stock price. It works like this. It's called the PE valuation. Price to earnings ratio valuation approach. Like I said, it's almost silly. Look, you take the company's current price earnings ratio, and then you time that by the projected earnings for the next period. earnings per share. You take the current P-E ratio, P-E, P-O-E sub zero, that means the current one, and then you look at what the forecast for earnings per share is for the next period. Now, how hard is that? It's actually not that hard because companies do earnings calls, and they'll say, we are projecting our earnings for the next quarter, for the next year, will be such and such. So that's not hard information to come by. You can make it hard if you want to try to do your own projection, but the company's going to tell you what it thinks is going to happen. And that will actually equal the price of the stock, your projected price of the stock. So, for example, company projects EPS at $3.20 per share. Its current PE ratio is 12.8. All you do is just say, okay, price to earnings times earnings will equal the projected price. So in other words, I just take 12.8 times $3.20 per share, and that equals, if I bring up the calculator here real quick, 12.8 times $3.20, $40.96 per share. Okay, so the stock price is below that, you'd probably buy it. If the stock price is above that, you'd probably sell it or short sell it if you could. And it's a really simplistic, almost a stupid Petrix kind of model. But like I said, I've seen it lots used. It's a quick back of the envelope way of getting a rough idea of the projected stock price. Is it right or wrong? Well, if it were always wrong, no one would use it. So, it, you know, all I can say is it's out there and it's used, so it must have some validity to it, as silly as it might be. Now, I wrote something down here. I want to check to see if I'm remembering this correctly. No, that's not what I wanted. I wrote down a quick note to comment on something. Okay. Another one that's out there. This one's a little bit heavier. Don't take it too seriously. The homework, as I've written it, all we do is just give you the numbers, just plug them in. But I do want to say a little bit of quick background on it, okay? This is called the enterprise value. The enterprise value approach. Now, how this one works, EV equals the market price, the market value. Well, let me do this as a value. The market value. Now, to get the price, you do divide it by the number of shares outstanding, but I'll do it as just the total value. The enterprise value is the market value of equity. Now, that's just the market cap. Market value of equity is your market cap. Plus the market value of debt. Now, this one is a little bit nastier because the book value of debt will probably be different from what the market says that value is. So what you would want to do is take the book value and see what the market's correction is. And I'll show you what I mean by that. It's actually not as hard as it sounds. plus the market value of other obligations. In other words, what's the market value of the things that are on the liability side that aren't actually the long-term debt? Truth be told about that, well, let me. It's probably you're going to just use the book value unless the company's in trouble. Now, minus cash and cash equivalents. This gives you the enterprise value. Let me show you in practice what this means. The best way to do this. Let me do Netflix. I'll do Netflix to show you how you do this. It's not that hard. As a matter of fact, I'll even make it a little easier on myself by not going to the SEC. Okay. Finance.yahoo.com. NFLX. Okay. Netflix. What the heck? NFLX. Is there some reason this sucks? Oh, there it is. It lagged there. Don't tell me they went over the cliff that fast. Okay, look. The market cap is the market value of the equity. 125,958. 125 billion. $958 million. So I'll put that in billions, 125.958. Market cap is market value equity. Now, here's where it gets a little bit trickier. Look over here. I'm going to look at the financials right here and look at the balance sheet. Now, the balance sheet is showing that their long-term debt is $10.360 billion. That's book value, 10.360. Billion. That's not exactly right, though. That's the book value, not the market value. In order to find the market value, you can make it really hard, and I'm not going to make it really hard. I'm going to take sort of like a rough approach. Let me look here. Let me go to Google, and I'm going to say NFLX bonds. Okay, look here. I see that the current price of these is $110,779 per 100. In other words, the market says these are actually worth 1.11 times their book. Because if the market value of the debt were exactly the book, the bonds would be selling at par. Here, we can see that the bonds are selling above par, which means the market value of them is about 10% more than the book value. So what I would do is I would adjust the book value by 1.1, where is that? 10779. Like that. Now, is that correct? Actually, probably not, because Netflix probably has different bonds out there in notes with different market prices. So maybe 1.0 overall, it might not be a factor of 1.10. It might be a factor a little bit higher or a little bit lower. but at least we're getting something closer to the, we see that its debt is more valuable than its than the book is representing. That's the main thing, is to recognize that book values are not representative of true price, true value. And I mean, I could, like I said, I mean, I could take the weighted average of the prices of all of the bonds and find out what the real factor is, but that's an awful lot like work on a very cold, snowy night. So I'm going to chicken out on that and go over here to the financials again. Now, the market value of the other debt. Now, what I would probably do to start that, to take a stab, is I just say, all right, take the total liabilities, start with total liabilities minus what I've already done, which was the long-term debt. That would be the other liabilities. So I'd start at least with 20.736. Minus the what I already took there, the book at 10.360 for the long term. That would be the rest of the liabilities. The other claims. Now, here's the thing. For these, if the company is healthy, the book is probably what they're going to pay, what it costs. What I put in there. It would only be if the company were in serious trouble that I would want to adjust that. Like, for example, a company near bankruptcy, I would probably say, well, these are really, these liabilities are worth 50 cents on the dollar, 20 cents on the dollar in liquidation. I would probably do an adjustment only if, to represent market, only if the company were not likely to just pay them off like a normal company does. But if the company is really just going to pay off, let's say its wages payable, it's going to pay them at market, it's going to pay what the book says. We owe you $200, so I'm going to pay you $200. Maybe not this week. I'll hook you up with that money sometime down the line. Okay, but don't worry too much about this in a normal company. And then minus the cash and cash equivalents. Come right up here to the top. Cash and cash equivalents, $3.794 billion. And we can get at least a decent stab, at enterprise value for Netflix. And I'm going to just honk that out here and do watch it if I make a mistake here. 125.958 plus 10.360 times the market adjustment of 1.10779 plus the 20.736 minus what we'd already counted in liabilities, the debt, that 10.360, and then minus the cash and cash equivalents, 3.974. Survey says the enterprise value is 143.837. 143 million .837. That's the enterprise value of Netflix. Okay, what does this buy us? Divided by the number of shares outstanding, and you've got at least one way to estimate an intrinsic value of the stock. That's basically all there is to this. Nothing too complicated. Now, I want you to notice something here. Notice that cash actually reduces enterprise value. You see that minus sign on cash? If I were to add that cash back in, let's say Netflix didn't have all of those assets tied up in cash, I would add that back, that 10 point, no, I'm sorry. Oh, no, yeah, add the 3.974, I wasn't looking at the right number. Okay, Netflix would have a little bit higher enterprise value. Now, I can even do this. I could do the 143.8367044 divided by the 147.8107044. So I see that the cash reduces the enterprise value of Netflix by about, 2.6%. That's an interesting thing, you see, because cash is not working. It's not doing something for the company, which simply means that the cash is a little bit of a drag on the value of a company. In this case, it's about 2.6% lower because Netflix holds a lot of cash. I mean, relative to its total, it's not a lot, but still, when you're talking about a company having $3.8 billion in just cash, that's a lot of money. That's a serious thing. That's money. That is current assets that are not working for the company. They're not doing anything. They're just sitting there. So you would have to ask. Netflix people are not stupid. They've got to have some good reason to have all that cash on hand. And we'll trust their judgment on this. Let me show you another company, though, real quick. Are any of you familiar with a company called GameStop? Yeah. GameStop is near death. Now, if you were to look at GameStop, now I'm going to go over here. GameStop debt. Good grief. Let me see if I can find a place where it shows what GameStop debt is currently, what the market value of GameStop debt is, what the price is right now. Just give me a bond, anything, for God's sake. MarketWatch. Are we going to get a number here? Come on. Come on. Let me see what's current quote on GameStop debt. This is one of those fluff pieces that's not going to help me at all. Let me try something. GameStop. Let me try. Okay, GameStop. 101.013. Okay, so my adjustment factor for the book would be 1.013. I'll take a stab at that, okay? just say that's where I want to be. So we've got that 1.013. Now I'm going to do the enterprise value for GameStop here. Now the first thing that I want to do, and just follow with me on it, is we're going to go over here to the, let me get the summary here. Summary, come on. Here we go. Summary. Okay, its market cap is 492.089. So the market cap, the market value of equity, is 492.089. That's the first term, market value of equity, is the market cap. Now plus, now I'm going to go back over here to the financials, and I'm going to look at the balance sheet and see what its long-term debt at book is. Book on long-term debt is 471. Okay, I've got to watch out what I'm doing here. My units are whacked here. Okay, 471 million. The summary, yeah, are you kidding me? Oh, okay. Well, it was what I thought it was. Okay. Okay. So the book value of the debt right now, let's try the balance sheet. The book on debt right now is 471,600. 471.6. Now I multiply it by that adjustment factor, which was 101.013. Okay, there we go. So that takes care of market value of debt. Now plus other liabilities. And I'm just going to say, all right, let's just take their total liabilities, 2708 minus what we already counted in the debt, which was 471.6. Now, ideally, I would make some kind of a correction there, market value versus book value, but let's just say the market value is the book on the rest of their obligations. Minus, now here is the knockdown. Look at their cash and cash equivalents. $1.6 billion in cash. Just parked there. So that would be 1624.4. So now we can see what the enterprise value of GameStop is. Enter. It's only $48.7 million. But look at what happened. It's that cash that's killing the enterprise value. Look what would happen if they didn't have all those assets in cash. Add back that 1624.4, and then we're going to take that. We're going to take the 48.7419198.9198 and divide that by the 50,366 point do this 3198 98. So they're eating up about 3.2% of their company. Yeah.
For this one, why is the market value at 101,
but
for that one, it was like 1.1?
Because, okay, interest rates have gone down in recent years. Okay, so what happens is that those coupons that were issued long ago, essentially the current rates are much lower than they were when either of these companies issued their debt. And what that means is that because the yields, what the market thinks it should pay, is lower than what it is paying on the coupons, which they set long ago when interest rates were higher. Okay, we're going to have the bond selling at a premium to par, above 100. Now, to your specific question, why are Netflix's at 1.10 and GameStop's only at 1.01? The simple reason, the best reason, is simply that GameStop has actually gotten much riskier. So its yield, so although Netflix, the market says it's gone up like this, and the coupon stayed like this, okay? So there's a big premium. But with GameStop, because GameStop is in so much financial trouble, its risk has gone up a lot. So in other words, although interest rates in general have gone down, the yield to maturity on GameStop debt has not gone down at all. So it's going to be closer to book, par, 1.00, than Netflix will. Simply think about it this way. Think about it this way, okay? You've got, okay, coupon YTM. Okay. Now the coupon, let's say for both of them, the coupon is 5%. That would have been the interest rate when they were issued. Now when the yield to maturity goes down, so they're both 5%, NFLX and GME. Okay, so now, yield to maturity goes down on both of them. This one goes down to, let's say, 3%. The price skyrockets to a factor of 1.10 on Netflix. But the yield to maturity didn't fall nearly as much on GameStop because GameStop was becoming riskier. So even though in normal conditions it would have gone down to 3% just like Netflix did, it might have gone down only a little bit simply because the yield to maturity would not have gone down nearly as much. Say only down to 4.8% because it should have gone down to 3%, but GameStop got riskier, so it didn't go down that much. So the price would not have gone up by that much, it would have gone up by only that much, much less, just because GameStop was getting so risky after it had issued the debt instruments. But it's a decent question, and in this case, though, there's another story here as well. You see, GameStop brought in new executives who are swearing to high heaven they are going to turn this company around and make it a big player in the third decade of the 21st century coming up. We're turning this company around. And the problem is, the reality is, no, they're not. They're going to go bankrupt. They're going to die. They've got a choice. They can either have a soft landing to the crash site, or they can just fly right up to it at a high altitude and spiral down into a big crater. Look here. Do you see this $1.6 billion in cash? Step one, first, admit that the company isn't going to survive, and issue this as a special dividend to your shareholders. That sets the stage for the shareholders to be happy. They're not going to be pissed that the company died. They got a massive, nice dividend. Second, by taking that out, the company actually increases its enterprise value, which should theoretically actually cause the stock price to go up too. So that sets the stage for the third step. Just simply carry the company forward as long as you can, 2-3 years on a couple of new boxes that are coming out, and then just simply go into bankruptcy. That would be the logical thing to do here. Wipe out that cash in a special dividend. That'll bring up your enterprise value for a while, and then just simply wander off into the night over the next couple of years. Generate what revenue you can, pay off what bills you can, get as much revenue as you can. Especially what stuns me is this accounts payable is insane. More than $1 billion in accounts payable. Don't pay them off though. Get your long-term debt down as you can. Get that off the books. Why? Because the long-term debt is collateralized. They'll have senior, or at least they'll be senior in line to get their money. So they'll strip the assets anyway. The accounts payable, they probably are going to be the last to be paid, even in bankruptcy. So worry about them last. First, worry about your shareholders. Give them a nice fat dividend so they'll shut up while you die. And then you go from there. Take care of what you can of your long-term debt. And then if whatever's left, that's what the bankruptcy court can liquidate and give to the accounts payable and whatever else you owe. Yeah. Did I do it? I did 1.1, didn't I? 1.1? Did I? Wow. If I did that, then I am going to be really excited. Oh, yeah. That's an absolute ass bath. I don't think this calculator actually prints in red, does it? My God. You know, 1.1. What did you get for if you? 581.11. Ouch. Yeah. Any way you cut it, this is a dead company. It's just waiting for the hearse to show up and haul it away. But that's GameStop. Now, interestingly enough, Netflix is fairly leveraged. Let me think here. Real quick, I'm not going to do the whole thing. I just like to have a giggle looking at Tesla. Because Tesla is still, somehow it is still one of those wayward but highly loved and valued children of Wall Street. Now, if you look at Tesla right off the bat, you can see that, whoops, let me do this. The market, let me do Tesla, TSLA. TSLA. Summary. Its market cap is only $56.76 billion. That is not big. That's not a very significant market cap in the world of corporations, especially for as much press as this company gets. And as much pot as that guy who runs it smokes, this company is not that impressive. It's a relatively small cap company. Overall, $56.76 billion. Well, okay, now, let me just quickly show you the balance sheet. Look at that cash. $3.685 billion. In other words, right off the bat, you can see that their cash position is really bleeding enterprise value on Tesla. It's really hurting it. Quite a bit more than it is than a similar amount in cash is hurting Netflix. Because Netflix is starting with a market value of equity of $176 billion. And then talking about $3.1 or something like that billion dollars bleeding at its enterprise value in cash. Here we're talking about a company that's a third the size of Netflix that has that much has even more cash bleeding its enterprise value. Hence, you can see that there is clearly a big difference between a Netflix and a Tesla. Tesla's enterprise plus cash is a lot worse condition. I'd almost be tempted to do it, but I wanted to get on to a couple more subjects here. Let me show you this last one. The last one is called the economic value added, EVA. The economic value added. Economic value added. Now, this one I want to say this another way, and I've got to. Equity capital times the return on equity minus the cost of capital. Now, return on equity is just that net income over shareholders' equity. In this case, the equity capital, I probably use market value capital. I still use market cap for this. Now, this one, ROE minus cost of capital. The cost of capital, probably you would want to use for that one just the WACC, the weighted average cost of capital. That's probably what you do. Okay, so in a case like this, let's say that you have a company that has a market cap of, oh, let's say, $120 billion. Okay? And then I would times that by the return, and let's say $120 billion. Now, the ROE of this company, let's say that its ROE is right now 25%. And let's say that its weighted average cost of capital is right now 11%. WACC is 11%. Think about that thing in parentheses. Look, the shareholders are getting a return, gross return, of 25%. The capital itself that is used to generate that is costing 11%. So essentially, that's just your net return to the equity, 25% minus the 11%. So in this case, all you do, and I mean, this is just look at the numbers that you're given. Don't think about what's going on with them. Clear. 120 times the difference between your return on equity, 0.25, and your WACC, weighted average cost of capital, 0.11. So the enterprise value added is $16.8 billion. Now, that one you could take by the number of shares outstanding and you get a theoretical intrinsic price per share. How do these all line up if you take these numbers and you divide by the number of shares? Which one is usually the best for getting the right answer? Oddly enough, overall, that stupid price earnings valuation is closer more often. But if you want to look like you're really busy in your job, You do one that looks really complicated, like enterprise value. If you want to, I mean, economic value added, honestly, I don't see it used too much. I do see it used, but the one that is so popular is that price earnings valuation. This one over here, that Horizon dividend growth model, it is great. But man, you have to really know how to predict those dividends, because you're going to have to predict some erratic dividends for at least a couple of years. And that might not be easy to do. If you do it well, that one gets you a really close approximation of intrinsic value. But like I said, that's the one that's popular, and it's obviously popular because it's simple, but also it's popular because it gets you a pretty close number to intrinsic value. So take that for what it's worth. That's all I have for you tonight. Go home.